It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Thank you for joining us as we honor the brave warriors who gave their lives for ours, spending their last moments on this earth in defense of this country and of its people. Words cannot measure the depth of their devotion, the purity of their love, or the totality of their courage. We only hope that every day we can prove worthy, not only of their sacrifice and service, but of the sacrifice made by the families and loved ones they left behind. Special, special people. I especially want to extend our gratitude to Secretary John Kelly for joining us today. I always like to call him General. He understands more than most ever could or ever will the wounds and burdens of war. Not only did Secretary proudly serve in the military for more than 40 years, enduring many hardships, but he and his incredible wife, Karen, have borne the single most difficult hardship of them all, the loss of their son, Robert, in service to our country. Robert died fighting the enemies of all civilizations in Afghanistan. To John, Karen, Heather, Kate, Andrea, and the entire Kelly family, today, 300 million American hearts are joined together with yours. We grieve with you, we honor you, and we pledge to you that we will always remember Robert and what he did for all of us. Thank you, John.
That was President Trump at Arlington Cemetery yesterday. Sandy Rios with you on this Tuesday following Memorial Day. He laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and addressed Gold Star families. And of course, you heard him talk about Homeland Secretary John Kelly's son, Robert, who was killed in 2010 during a foot patrol in Afghanistan's Helmand province. And he talked to all of them. He spoke to those who were unknown. He said, today we also hold a special vigil for heroes whose stories we cannot tell because their names are known to God alone, the unknown soldiers. And so if you've never spent a Memorial Day or been to Arlington Cemetery in Washington, you have missed it. And I hope that you put that on your list of things to do. It is a solemn ceremony when you see all those white grave markers lining the hills at such a long distance. You know, my husband and I have gone out two Christmases in a row to lay wreaths on the thousands of stones out there. People come from all over the country to do it, and they do similar things on Memorial Day. And of course, yesterday was a time that we remember the sacrifices of those who served and died. I remembered my own father. I remembered my father-in-law, my other father-in-law. I mean, there's just such a long list. And when you think about the men in your life who served and are no longer with us, especially those fathers and grandfathers, we think about the things that they taught us. Even if they didn't give details about their service, they taught us what it means to be free. This was the subject at my dinner table, I'll tell you. My parents understood that. My dad left for the war when he was 20 years old. He was gone for 3 years. My sister was just an infant at the time. She was 3 years old when he came back. He hadn't seen her. The impact on families, but he was willing to do that, and so were thousands and thousands of others. And understanding, as Ronald Reagan said, that freedom is never more than one generation away from being lost, and that we too must do our part, whatever it takes. to preserve freedom, we must be willing to do. And so it was refreshing to hear Donald Trump's remarks. I have to say, the contrast is great to me. I remember being there when Barack Obama came and watching his limo pull by, and I just couldn't bear it. I knew what he was doing. I knew how the rules of engagement were setting up our soldiers for death, how there was so much friendly fire because he was cooperating with our enemies. And I turned my back on him. I turned my back on him, would do it again. I couldn't bear to have that president give some fake comfort to people whose deaths he was responsible for, just plainly put. And so it was refreshing to me to see a president who really does honor our soldiers in this way. His words meant something to me. And so let me also say, this is really interesting. You know, Rolling Thunder always comes into Washington. That's the, for the most part, Vietnam vets on their motorcycles. And it is so impressive to see them ride through the cities. It you know, blocks the highways and everything, but it's fun is probably the wrong word, but in some ways, and it's great. It's just a lot of fun to go down by the Lincoln Memorial to see them afterwards as they mill about and talk. And there's just Washington is not infused with patriots. A lot of patriots are there, but the pervading population are not, they're not lovers of this country because they are poisoned by this notion that America is to blame for all the ills in the world. And so it's refreshing when thousands and thousands of people come in and sort of overwhelm the left with their flags and their love of country. And so yesterday, they always start in the Pentagon parking lot, which is huge, by the way, huge, huge, as Donald Trump would say. They had sort of a surprise guest yesterday, and it was Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. I don't know if you saw the video of that, but he was in his leather jacket, had his own motorcycle, and he rode with them through the streets of Washington, D.C. I thought that was very cool. I have to say, I thought that was very cool. And I have to give measured response here because on many, many policies, I'm in total disagreement with Rex Tillerson. He has been kind of a leftist on many things like global warming. His understanding of Islam has been foggy at best. I think he's a very successful businessman who, as typical successful businessmen, this is my perspective on it, are not clued into the nuances of public policy and sometimes just get it wrong. And I think Rex Tillerson has gotten it wrong. But this was very encouraging to me. I want to share this with you. This is from Reuters. It came out yesterday. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has declined a request to host an event to mark Islam's holy month of Ramadan. Now, that is amazing because the State Department and other departments have been doing this since Madeleine Albright started this back in 1999 when she was Secretary of State for Bill Clinton. And it's been happening ever since. And so Rex Tillerson said no. He said, no, the Ramadan the end of Ramadan will not be celebrated at the State Department. And you can imagine the State Department is filled with the left of the left. You can imagine the uproar, the upset, the horror of horrors. And I just hope that bleeds over into other agencies. I don't think the White House has, under Barack Obama and I guess under Hunter Bush, too. They always held this dinner at the end of Ramadan, and the White House has not said they're going to do that. And me thinks maybe they're not going to do that. And I think that's good. I think that's very good. So those are some good things coming out. You know that the president spent a lot of time overseas. He's just come back home. And I just want to go back. This happened last week, but I just thought this was such a great moment. And that's when President Trump, in typical Trump fashion, but I thought very soberly, and certainly rising to the occasion as leader of the United States of America, sort of shamed NATO leaders. I know you heard it, but you have to hear it on this show too. Here's the president speaking before the leaders of NATO.
The NATO of the future must include a great focus on terrorism and immigration, as well as threats from Russia and on NATO's eastern and southern borders. These grave security concerns are the same reason that I have been very, very direct with Secretary Stoltenberg and members of the alliance in saying that NATO members must finally contribute their fair share and meet their financial obligations. But 23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense. This is not fair to the people and taxpayers of the United States. And many of these nations owe massive amounts of money from past years and not paying in those past years. Over the last 8 years, the United States spent more on defense than all other NATO countries combined. If all NATO members had spent just 2% of their GDP on defense last year, we would have had another $119 billion for our collective defense and for the financing of additional NATO reserves.
I say yes, yes, and yes. So the leaders of Germany, France, Belgium, Spain, Italy, all standing there, Canada, you know, all embarrassed, no, not embarrassed, mocking, sort of smirking, disconcerted, because how dare an American leader actually call them up? You know, Germany is the wealthiest country in Europe. Germany does very well, by the way, and yet they are paying precious little for their own protection, allowing America to do that for them when America now is in need. You would think they would be saying, in return, we are so grateful for what you have done in our hemisphere, for coming over here and pouring your resources into helping us be safe from the threat of Russia all these many years, that we are happy, yes, happy, to step up to the plate and start paying our fair share. The president is not saying the United States won't pay our fair share, will no longer support NATO, just saying it's time for you to step up to the plate and pay your own way. We can't do it anymore. American taxpayers, it's not fair to them. What is so outrageous about that? And yet, you know, many political pundits are going apoplectic over this, saying that this is an attack against NATO. You know, it's changing the order of things. Well, yes, it is, because life is different now. When we formed NATO after World War II, Russia was a very great threat. And we know that because then we went into the Cold War and we saw what Stalin and what Khrushchev and all the other Russian leaders did to their own people and how they shut them off, the Berlin Wall, etc. There was a terrible Cold War that ensued, and Russia was a great threat trying to swallow up the globe. And so, but now things are different. Russia is still aggressive. Russia still has nuclear weapons, but not, Russia is not the Soviet Union and not the power it once was. And so, and the Western European nations, of course, have recovered from World War II and have built their economies. Not all of them, because some of them have been very foolish. They have sort of gone down the path of socialism and they've destroyed their economies. But that's not our fault. Germany's an exception to that, although, you know, their socialistic tendencies are pretty dreadful, but they certainly understand capitalism and have become wealthy as a result of that. And so it's time for them to pay. It is different. Yes, things are different now. It's time for them to pay their way. I thought that was fabulous, and I applaud it. And why is it that presidents, Republican and Democrat, for this many decades, have just given the world, emptied our treasury in foolish ways? And put a burden on Americans that's just undue. We were happy to pay. We were happy to fight World War II. We sent our dads and our brothers, and we gave them our greatest treasure. We paid a lot for that. So it's time for them to step up to the plate and pay their, as the left loves to say, fair share. All right, there's a lot to talk about today, but you knew that, right? All right, Sandy Rios in the morning, back in just a few minutes for more. And stuff in Texas, they're coming after Sean Hannity, trying to get him off the air. The whole dust-up about Jared Kushner being a Russian agent, it's just amazing stuff. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but He is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
In Bhutan, where nearly 78% of the population is Buddhist, can the gospel of Jesus Christ make inroads? Hi, I'm Don Shank, director of the Tide Global Radio Ministry, and this is today's Global Update. Bhutan is relatively closed to the gospel and is one of the least evangelized nations. But in 2012, the Tide Ministry began Christian broadcasting in Dzongka, the official language of Bhutan. Please join us in praising God for pastors that are helping to transition curious listeners into committed believers who stand firm in their faith. A pastor who works with the Tide Partner Ministry in Bhutan recently shared this about a new believer. The listener and his wife are Buddhist, but listen to our radio program. Slowly they want to believe in the Lord and are interested in taking baptism. Please uphold them in your prayers. To find out how you can get involved in the Tide Radio work and help us share the gospel in Bhutan and around the globe, visit thetide.org. That's thetide.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
New information is emerging about the illegal immigrant accused in a DUI crash that gravely injured a little boy. The San Diego Tribune reports Banda Acosta had been returned to Mexico 17 times over the past 14 years, and not once did he face criminal charges. Not once. He was last deported in January, but somehow managed to get back into the country. And on May 6, Acosta was arrested after a car crash that left a 6-year-old American boy with deep skull fractures. To be blunt, the federal government failed the Lake family of San Diego, California. More specifically, the Bush and Obama administrations. They refused to secure the border. And as a result, a little boy was nearly killed. The only good and decent thing to do now is for President Obama and President Bush to pay Lenox Lake's medical bills and apologize to his parents. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The documents show that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, or FISA court, sternly admonished the FBI under James Comey's leadership for violating the laws governing the Bureau's handling of certain kinds of classified intelligence. At issue is the National Security Agency's targeting of foreigners outside the U.S. under Section 702 of the FISA law. The FBI can query the NSA's 702 database to find a U.S. citizen, his phone number, or email address, but only under certain restrictions. At his final congressional appearance before being fired by President Trump, Director Comey assured lawmakers those provisions are strictly observed.
The information that's in the 702 database has been lawfully collected, carefully overseen and checked, and our use of it is also appropriate and carefully overseen and checked. Nobody gets access to the information that sits in the 702 database unless they've been trained correctly.
Yet the FISA court found the FBI in recent years made 702 intel available to unauthorized individuals, including contractors, and sometimes retained the data for too long. These are breaches of minimization, the practice of keeping to a minimum an agency's infringement of U.S. citizens' rights. The contractors, the FISA court found, had access to raw FISA information that went well beyond what was necessary to respond to the FBI's requests. The improper access, the court added, seems to have been the result of deliberate decision-making. The court is concerned about the FBI's apparent disregard of minimization rules and whether the FBI may be engaging in similar disclosures of raw Section 702 information that have not been reported.
So it definitely looks like there should be some repercussions for those who broke the law. And it does look like there might be some work for Congress in terms of fine-tuning the law.
All right. Well, that was James Rosen's report on Friday. And that's important. You know, that happened on a holiday weekend, and I'm not sure enough people were listening. This is the story. The FISA court, the very secret court in Washington, D.C., the one that nobody knows anything about, no one's supposed to know anything about, where the FBI goes to ask for permission to surveil in the cases of terrorism, suspected terrorism, rebuked the FBI under James Comey, blaming them of accusing them of being careless and maybe intentionally allowing too many people to see who was who in these leaks, revealing names. And I can't go beyond that because I have to be careful. I'm not sure. I want to make sure I state this exactly right. That's what James just reported. That is shocking. Happened under James Comey. And James Comey, you heard James play that clip of Comey. Oh, all the stuff collected was done perfectly. We were very careful in accordance with the law. That's just not true. That's just not true. It just makes you understand that James Comey should have been out a long time ago. And I want to just take a sidebar here to related to misbehavior and serious misdeeds. We did a show on Thursday with Diana West. Friday with Diana West on the Seth Rich. That's the Democratic staffer who was murdered on the streets of Washington. Who now his story, his mysterious murder, when it looks like it might be absolutely highly likely that he was the leaker of the email from the DNC to WikiLeaks, it looks not like speculation, not like wild conspiracy theories, but anyone who dares says this now has cooties or maybe thrown off the air, as is the case with their working on it with Sean Hannity. And I hope to get to that in just a second. But I'm telling you that there is lots of smoke on that story. There are many people who have said publicly that Seth Rich was indeed the leaker. But if that's true, then what that does is it completely dismantles the entire Russian narrative. And that's why the attempts to silence the story about Seth Rich are unbelievable. If you did not hear that interview with Diana West on the timeline of the Seth Rich murder and more information, please go and listen to it. This has probably been one of the most trafficked, shared interviews we've done in a long time. So I want to suggest that if you did not see it or hear it, go to Friday on our Facebook page or go to Sandy Rios. Go to goafr.net and you can find it. AFR.net and Google it and you'll be able to find it or go to the Facebook page. But it's my interview with Diana West about Seth Rich, and it is absolutely jaw-dropping. And you're not going to hear it many places. And if they get Sean Hannity off the air, you might not hear it from him either. They made him be silent on it. I told you that Fox is not trustworthy on this story. They are not. There are a lot of things going on right now that are unsettling in every way, in everywhere. And so so I hope that you'll go. Adam, let's post that again so people can find it easily. We'll put it up again today so you can listen to it. And along that, now here's interesting, James, I love James, they'll be targeting him next. Well, they did target him. Remember that they surveilled his phone under the Obama administration. James came in with a little tag after his report on Friday talking about how the FISA court had rebuked the FBI for what it felt was a potential breach of the Fourth Amendment. And this is James's tag, like disclaimer. Just listen, it's pretty interesting. Here it is.
I was in error when I stated on this program yesterday that the New York Times and Washington Post had not reported on the FISA court's admonition of the NSA for its own Fourth Amendment violations. Both newspapers covered the change in NSA practices instituted by the Trump administration, and the Times published 9 words from the documents we've explored in much greater depth here in the 9th paragraph of a story that ran on page A21 2 weeks ago. I regret the error.
I love James. I love him. He is so funny. He's so sarcastic. Okay, so he says, yeah, they did talk about it. I regret my error. They spent 9 words on the 9th page. 2 weeks ago at A21. So then in yesterday's report, he posted for Brett Baer yesterday, so he updated his disclaimer, so you have to hear this one too. Here it is.
And now, a correction to a correction I offered on this program on Friday. Last week, we reported on recently declassified documents in which the FISA court sternly admonished the National Security Agency and the FBI for violations of Americans' Fourth Amendment rights during the Obama era. I made 2 errors. I said the website Circa broke this story, and I said the New York Times and Washington Post hadn't covered it. And my last attempt at a correction didn't do justice. So here is take 2. In fact, it was the New York Times' Charlie Savage who first broke the NSA violations and the FISA court's intervention in an exclusive that was published on page A1 on April 28th. The Washington Post followed the next day with an article that cited the Times reporting. Then, on May 11th, after the FISA court documents were declassified on the website of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Charlie Savage again reported on the matter for the Times, including quotations from the FISA court documents. I regret those errors.
All right, so James setting the record straight. But now, still, the story is the story. And the story is that the FISA court says that the FBI... my words, abused their surveillance information and did not handle it carefully and may have broken or breached the Fourth Amendment. That's serious, especially serious when Director Comey testified under oath. You heard in the clip, oh no, all of that was handled just perfectly. We followed all the guidelines. It was all done lawfully. Maybe not. And so here is another story. I want to read this to you. This was in the New York Post just a few days ago, written by Paul Sperry, how Team Obama tried to hack the election. New revelations have surfaced that the Obama administration abused intelligence during the election by launching a massive domestic spy campaign that included snooping on Trump officials. The irony is mind-boggling. Targeting political opposition is long a technique of police states like Russia, which Team Obama has loudly condemned for allegedly using its own intelligence agencies to hack our election. The revelations, as well as testimony this week from former Obama intel officials, show the extent to which the Obama administration politicized and weaponized intelligence against Americans. Thanks to Circa News, we know now the National Security Agency under President Barack Obama routinely violated privacy protections while snooping through foreign intercepts involving U.S. citizens and failed to disclose the breaches, prompting the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court a month before the election to rebuke administration officials. And then it goes through to explain, I'm not going to read that part, explains what he's talking about, and I will put this article on our Facebook page so you can read more of the details. The FISA court called it a very serious Fourth Amendment issue. The number of NSA data searches about Americans mushroomed after Obama loosened rules for protecting such identities from government officials and thus the reporters they talked to. The FISA court again called it a very serious Fourth Amendment issue in violation of a 2011 rule prohibiting officials from searching Americans' information without a warrant and had been conducting such queries in violation of that prohibition with much greater frequency than had been previously disclosed to the court. So they were doing this without telling the FISA court, who was the overseer of this whole surveillance program. A number of those searches were made from the White House and included private citizens working for the Trump campaign, some of whose identities were leaked to the media. The revelations earned a stern rebuke from the ACLU and from civil liberties champion Senator Rand Paul. We also learned this week, again, I'm reading from the New York Post and Paul Sperry's article. We also learned this week that Obama intelligence officials really had no good reason attaching a summary of a dossier on Trump to a highly classified Russia briefing they gave to Obama just weeks before Trump took office. Now, stay with me. Remember the dossier you've heard me mention over and over again, what the nickname, the British slam would be dodgy. Dodgy dossier, the one that was prepared by the former British intelligence agent. That was just ridiculous. Okay, so this is the dossier they're talking about, and it seems as though, and from all I have read, we'll see when things unfold, that the FBI director used this phony dossier as a justification for this whole probe into some involvement with the Russians. So that's the dossier. So let me go back to this text. We also learned this week that Obama intelligence officials really had no good reason attaching a summary of a dossier on Trump to a highly classified Russia briefing they gave to Obama just weeks before Trump took office. So they attached this dossier with no credibility whatsoever to a highly classified intelligence briefing to Obama. Under congressional questioning Tuesday, Obama's CIA chief, John Brennan, said the dossier did not in any way factor into the agency's assessment that Russia interfered in the election. Why not? Because as Obama intel czar James Clapper earlier testified, we could not corroborate the sourcing. But that didn't stop John Brennan in January from attaching its contents to the official report for the president. He also included the unverified allegations in a briefing he gave to Hill Democrats. In so doing, Brennan virtually guaranteed that it would be leaked, which it promptly was. In short, Brennan politicized raw intelligence. In fact, he politicized the entire CIA. Langley vets, and that's the CIA headquarters, it's in Langley. Langley vets say Brennan was the most politicized director in the agency's history. Former CIA field directions officer Gene Coyle says Brennan was, quote, known as the greatest sycophant in the history of the CIA and a supporter of Hillary Clinton before the election. I find it hard to put any real credence in anything that man has to say. Coyle noted that Brennan broke with his predecessors who stayed out of elections. Several weeks before the vote, he made it very clear he was pulling for Hillary. His deputy Mike Morrell even came out and publicly endorsed her in the New York Times, claiming Trump was an unwitting agent of Moscow. Brennan isn't just a Democrat. He is a radical leftist who in 1980, during the height of the Cold War, voted for a Communist Party candidate for president. Now, I've told you that before several times, but bears reading it again. John Brennan, the head of the CIA under Barack Obama, voted for the Communist Party candidate in 1980 at the height of the Cold War. To go back to the article, when Brennan rants about the dangers of strongman Vladimir Putin targeting our elections and subverting our democratic process, does he not catch at least a glimpse of his own reflection? What he and the rest of the Obama gang did was inflict more damage on the integrity of our electoral process than anything the Russians might have done. And so we'll put this on our Facebook page, how Team Obama tried to hack the election. Isn't that something? And now, as President Obama comes back to the United States, New York Times splashes across its headline, you know, that Jared Kushner now tried to set up a back channel with Russia in meetings. And so that was the headline. And Jared Kushner, of course, the son-in-law of the president, the wife of the husband of Ivanka, who has taken a very prominent place. And I can't say I'm happy about that. I'm not. But this story is probably... it's just so thin. If you've been listening to the story, back channels, first of all, Fox is reporting today, correct this before I go on with any explanation, that back channel, Jared Kushner did not set up this back channel. It was mentioned in one meeting and suggested by the Russians over the issue of Syria and the battle that was going on in Syria. And so whether it happened or didn't happen, I don't know. But they're arguing against the New York Times a claim that this was instigated by Kushner. But the bottom line is back channels have been used by all kinds of presidents. They are common. Barack Obama used a back channel to deal with our enemy, Iran, to establish the Iran deal. Well, that's not a great example, is it? But the point is that back channels are done all the time. I have a lot to say about this. And so I also want to talk to you about what's happening with Sean Hannity, because it's just an amazing story. So I hope you'll stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And if the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Some of the most important words uttered in President Trump's speech in Saudi Arabia were when he said, quote, "Religious leaders must make this absolutely clear. If you choose the path of terror, your life will be empty, your life will be brief, and your soul will be condemned," unquote. Bold statement to make, especially in Saudi Arabia. The question is, what do Muslim religious leaders think? Is it the Manchester murderer or the Manchester martyr? Countless potential jihad victims await the answer.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, I'm Gary Robey, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken, and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a Call to Worship right here on American Family Radio.
The AFA Cultural Institute presents Revive Us Again, a powerful new DVD featuring David Butts of Harvest Prayer Ministries.
We need to experience the presence of Christ in a fresh, new way.
Revive Us Again outlines the history and meaning of revival and practical ways to pray for it.
It's time for another great awakening in the United States.
Revive Us Again is available from the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
Sister, you are loved. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart today. My sister Cynthia gave me a necklace shaped like an envelope. Inside, a tiny engraved postcard read, "Sister, you are loved." I wear that charming little reminder to help me on days when I know I may be facing some difficulty alone. After abortion, I felt so alone. God's love just did not seem real to me. Have you given up on being loved and being forgiven? Isaiah 61 pictures the Lord draping a garment of His praise over us instead of the spirit of despair which may cover us after abortion. God doesn't give up on us, so let's not give up on Him. Begin to put on this truth and wear it like your favorites. You are loved, you are forgiven, you are His. Find a network of Christ-centered organizations offering hope after abortion at cradlemyheart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. How ironic that the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals would choose the day after a man whose family immigrated from Libya conducted a murderous attack in Manchester, England, to block President Trump's effort to prevent such individuals from coming here. British investigators were dispatched to Libya hoping to discover the extent to which the suicide bomber, Salman Abedi, had help and or co-conspirators there. The absence of a functioning Libyan government makes such inquiries both dangerous and problematic. That's one of the reasons President Trump instituted his pause on immigration from Libya and other failed states. If the president is unable to exercise his constitutional and statutory authority to do that, there will be more Manchesters here. And there will be blood on the hands of jurists who arrogate to themselves decisions about national security they are neither equipped nor entitled to exercise. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
As an intelligence officer, we look for indications and warnings, and you look for patterns. And this is a clear pattern that's emerging. It's a pattern that shows a consistent effort to deceive. And when you have that, there's only one conclusion you can draw, again, from an intelligence standpoint, that this man was either a Russian agent, either aspiring to be a Russian agent, or was in fact a Russian agent. Now, I don't know if, what that means in terms of legality.
Hold on, this man being Jared Kushner?
Absolutely.
You think Jared Kushner was a Russian agent?
Absolutely.
Why would he be a Russian agent?
I will tell you exactly why. I think that in this case, we're going to look back. Look, we have Michael Flynn. We have a relationship with the Russians that goes back to at least 2014, right? I think that what the FBI is going to do now is look at this frame. We have from December to January, from the election to December, that there's this purported sort of contact with the Russians. I think the FBI is going to look back 3-4 years and look into Mr. Kushner's past and see if there's potentially more connection to the Russians.
That's a major allegation. I think a lot
Absolutely
of people could agree. Jared Kushner wants to be mega rich. Jared Kushner
yes.
wants to be mega powerful. Jared Kushner and Ivanka want to be mega, mega important, glamorous, superstar celebrities. But you really think he wants to be a Russian agent? I mean, that's kind of a stretch.
Hold on now. The concept of a Russian agent, that this is, as we heard Director Brennan said
enough.
About
that's
treason.
That's Naveed that Jamali on MSNBC. So now Jared Kushner isn't just, talking to the Russian ambassador. And, caught by surveillance, illegal unmasking of names. He is now a Russian agent. He didn't just allegedly, according to the New York Times, set up some sort of a back channel with the Russians. He's an agent. He's an actual agent, according to MSNBC now. Okay, so this is how crazy things are getting. It's unbelievable. And that's why it's really hard to take. When you see things like this, this is from Senator James Lankford. Many of you like him. I'll just tell you what he said on his Twitter account. Our Intel Committee voted unanimously today to give Senator Burr and Mark Warner blanket authority to issue subpoenas for our Russia investigation. Now, somehow, Senator Lankford thinks that that's something to be boasting about. He's excited about it. And I have to say that Senator Burr and Mark Warner is a vicious partisan who has said outrageous things. Senator Burr seems kind of excited about the being in spotlight and certainly not eager to do anything to protect his president or his party. And so one would ask, what the crime is. Just wondering. And does anyone really think, including Senator Lankford, that having Jared Kushner now before this in so-called intelligence, what an oxymoron, a committee in the Senate, the more I look at the people that sit in the Senate, the more I'm just dumbstruck by their, how did they get there? And how are some of them hanging onto those seats for so long? It is an absolute embarrassment. It is a perfect storm of incompetence, subterfuge, whatever words you might want to use. Some of them it's incompetent. Some of them I think it's willful cooperation with the left, but always making themselves look good. Or, crisp white shirts. But you can count on the Republicans. Whatever they can do to hurt President Trump and the American people. It's not just President Trump. It's really America itself. They're happy to do it. And so they're going to go all out on this Russia investigation. No pushback. None whatsoever. The Democrats feel free to march all over and stomp and say all kinds of outrageous things, but not the Republicans. They're going to have this investigation. We're going to fully cooperate. We'll call Jared Kushner and, of course, many people in Washington who are well aware of what happens in D.C. know that that will not be a good thing. That will become a circus. They will buy, because senators do this. I know it's a surprise, but senators actually like to grandstand. And when they have someone in front of them, especially the president's son-in-law, they kind of like to make speeches and accuse and say outrageous things. They are not held by any standards of truth. No one rebukes them, says that's a lie. They can say anything they want. Same thing happens in the House in these hearings. And so, but Jared Kushner now is a Russian agent. And so, but hey, the Republicans get to the bottom of this because, they're all over it. Senator Burr's all over it. So don't worry. And you know that he will be doing everything he can to protect the Republican president, right? From maybe not so much. It's kind of his day in the sun, it seems to me. He's performed so poorly on legislation. He's been a disgrace to North Carolina. That's my personal opinion. But now he's heading up this committee. So, wow, his chance, man. And it's John McCain's chance, too. And he's at it. Let me just say that he is, according to the Wall Street ABC. He said, I think ISIS can do terrible things, but it's the Russians who tried to destroy the fundamental of democracy, and that is to change the outcome of an American election. So says Senator John McCain, I see no evidence they succeeded, but they tried, and they're still trying to change elections. And we've done nothing since the election last November to respond to Vladimir Putin's attempt to change the outcome of our election. So way to go, Vladimir. We haven't responded at all. Then he goes on to say, I'm nervous from time to time. I do believe that the president has great confidence in the national security team. I do believe most of the time that he accepts their advice and counsel. Well, that's the thing he's happy. That's his happy place, because I told you that Senator McCain is working behind the scenes, actually said, I shared this with you a few months ago, that he was working with General Mattis and General McMaster, who are the opposite on issues of the current president of the United States, of the things he said on the campaign trail, of the things that many of us, many you and me, I certainly embrace what President Trump said on the stump for the most part about national security and about immigration and all of these things. McMaster and Mattis, not so much, not at all, in fact. They are John McCain's proteges. They work with him, and McCain sort of boasted that they were going to work around Donald Trump and get a lot of things done. So that's the positive paragraph. So he's happy about that, but he's also very happy to undermine this president in any way he can. So with friends like that, with James Lankford being so proud that the Intelligence Committee is getting right at it, boy, under Senator Burr, they've given him blanket authority to issue subpoenas. So that should be interesting. Very helpful, I'm sure, to President Trump and to the nation as we try our best to rein in the national debt, as we try to secure our borders. Well, not really, because they won't really do that for us. As we try to get a good budget, as we try to pass tax reform, as we try to reform tax health care, the Senate, not so much. In fact, Mitch McConnell just issued a statement that we need to have lower expectations about what they can actually do on Obamacare. So, listen, Senator McConnell, my message to you is, for many of us, our expectations of you, sir, and the Senate could not be much lower. So there you go. I promise to talk about this, and I want to, because there is an organized and concerted effort to get rid of any kind of media or pundits outlets, whether it's Fox or personalities who are actually speaking out and making the case for Donald Trump's policy, especially for Donald Trump right now. I'd say, O'Reilly was one of the highest profile that they brought down by this campaign, and the campaign involves going after corporations who support these entities. And it is, like I said, very organized. Media Matters, again, who monitors this show, is part of that. George Soros money is behind it. So let me just say that they went after Glenn Beck, as you will recall. They went after Bill O'Reilly, as I said, and had a victory with Bill. They went after Rush Limbaugh. They're still after Rush Limbaugh. They just haven't been able to pull him off the air because he gets more sponsors, but they do it economically so that there's the economic base is destroyed and then the person has to go off the air. And the way they do this is that they have an army of like fake people. There are a few real people, but they multiply themselves on Twitter and they will publish the list of advertisers on a list, and then they have their fake army send thousands of tweets to these businesses, and the businesses freak out and then withdraw their support. So that's how it works. Kind of that's the rudimentary description of it. Actually, I'd like to do a show on the deeper ways they do this, so that you can be more aware. But right now, let me just say that they're after Sean Hannity, and they are going after him. They're saying it's because of let me read their exact words. Let's see. Sean Hannity is a professional propagandist for President Donald Trump, as well as a bigot, a sexist, and a conspiracy theorist. That's what Media Matter wrote. As host of Fox News, Hannity, he has used his platform to advocate for authoritarian tactics toward the press, defend Trump's obstruction of the investigation into collusion between the president's associates and Russia, and attack judges who have ruled against Trump's Muslim bans. So that they put a list of the companies, and so far, this is what's happened, and this is where you come in. Cars.com has pulled off Sean Hannity's show, and so has, the other one is the insurance company, which I will tell you in just a second. BuzzFeed is one of the partners on this. So it was after the Seth Rich thing that was so important, and that kind of factors in and makes it personal for us because we've been hitting the Seth Rich story as well. This is when they really ramped things up against Sean Hannity. And so they've done that, and Hannity now is tweeting himself that his advertisers, some of them, he said, all my friends today, George Soros, Hillary Clinton, supported Media Matters is targeting all of my advertisers to try to get me fired. And at least five companies have now pulled out. This is the one I wanted to, this is the one that may affect many of you. It's USAA. I bet many of you get your insurance from USAA because they supposedly are military, a friendly American company, but they have pulled their support of Sean Hannity. And so if you're concerned about that, I'm just telling you, I'm sure my husband and I are concerned about that because I think USAA is our insurer. So here's a number if you want to call USAA. It's 210-531-8722. That's 210-531-8722. 531-8722. 210-531-8722. And so if you want to be, if you want to let your voice be heard, if you think Sean Hannity should be allowed to stay on Fox, and if you're upset and you want to counter this, way to go. Let me just tell you that this Media Matters effort is really, again, an army of fake people. I know I hear from them all the time. You know, I hear them on Facebook and on Twitter, and many of them are real people because they come up with the most obscene things you can imagine to say, as though that were dissuade me, as though anything they could say or any insult they could hurl would stop me from speaking the truth. It's just really silly. I guess I would say to those of you monitoring, you might as well give up. The only person I answer to is the Lord Jesus. And that's the only person I fear, really. And so you can say what you want. It's just not going to dissuade me. And I don't think it's going to dissuade Sean Hannity as well. Thank God for that. But he probably needs some help right now. And I also would say this gets into interference with commerce. It makes me wonder if RICO laws, that's racketeering laws, are not being broken here, and other laws as well. I think people are looking into this. So but right now, for the citizens of this country, if you want to do something about that and you want to respond as a consumer to what people are doing on the Sean Hannity issue, you can call that number. And we'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can. And by the way, right now, as of last week, there were 70 pages on the USAA website response page of opposition to them pulling out of Sean Hannity's show. I think that's really, really very interesting. Well, as the president comes back, of course, there are so many issues on the table. And you can imagine, he's overwhelmed. My understanding is that there may be some staff changes imminent. There's trouble in the West Wing. They're trying to root out the leakers. They're trying to kind of gear up. They've got a team they're putting together to fight this all-out assault. Continuous assault, this media crusade to brand in the American psyche that somehow Trump is colluding with the Russians. It really is almost a joke. It's like it got so silly a couple of decades ago that the left was on the other side and they actually made a movie called The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming. They tried to mock people that were really concerned at that time about the spread of communism. And now they're using the same tactic, but in a different way, because they're saying, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming. And really, it is so overblown. It is, it's just amazing. We have the FBI director cooperating, the CIA director cooperating, and they are not trustworthy people. This is the legacy of the Obama administration, and we need to be wise and fight back the best way we can. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.